This is Cincinnati Edition. On 91.7 WVXU, I'm Michael Monks. We're in the middle of National Donate Life Month when awareness is raised about the need to be an organ donor. Tens of thousands of organ transplants are performed by doctors in the U.S. every year, but the nation still has an organ waiting list that numbers more than 113,000. Nearly two dozen die each day waiting. Coming up, we'll talk with some local recipients of organ donations. Joining Cincinnati Edition in the studio to share stories are Mercy Hospital patient care assistant Jordan Ryan, who received a kidney after spending 13 years on dialysis. Welcome, Jordan.
Hi, thank you.
Miami University director for women's basketball, Veronica Mullen, an altruistic kidney donor to Jordan Ryan. Welcome, Veronica.
Thank you.
And community relations director for Life Center Organ Donor Network, Andrea Johnson. Welcome, Andrea.
Thank you.
And I guess you want us to call you Andy?
Yes.
Awesome. We'll do that for you.
Thank you.
If you'd like to share your stories about organ donations or situations that you've dealt with on this topic, give us a call. We'd love to hear from you as well. The number is 513-419-7100. You can also email talk at wvxu.org. Find us on Facebook or Twitter as well. We'd like to share your comments and your tweets. So, Jordan, I want to start with you. You spent 13 years on dialysis. So that was before the person sitting next to you today came through with a kidney for
you.
Why don't you start by telling us what illness you were dealing with?
Well, I was diagnosed at a young age with what's called nephrotic syndrome and FSGS. So it's basically like a disease that scars the filters on your kidneys until it just completely shuts down. So at 14, my kidneys failed, and I actually had gotten a kidney from my uncle, but the disease came back probably before I was even out of the OR. And that kidney lasted maybe 2 years, and then I was right back on dialysis.
So you had to go through two different kidney transplants. Mm-hmm. Okay, so talk about that first one before we get into the story today. So your uncle was a match?
Perfect match. Yeah, it was my dad's brother. He donated. My dad and him both got matched, and because of testing reasons, my dad was not able to, but my uncle did, and I was only on dialysis that time. It's for 6 months, but unfortunately, that one just kind of fell through.
What did you feel like when they told you, "We're sorry, but this first transplant's not going to work. We're going to have to do something else"?
It's really devastating. Like, I don't know, because, like, that one, it's like your relative, and he really kind of tried so hard to help you, and I know he felt bad, too. So it was really sad. All my family was just devastated.
Talk about what dialysis is, because I know it's a term that a lot of us are familiar with as it treats people with kidney issues, but tell us about the physical nature of that treatment and the impact on you.
Dialysis is not fun. I did it. I had three different types of dialysis. So the first one that I did was we tried hemodialysis, which is actually what is like in-center. So I did that through a central line, but there's other ways that you can do that, like through your arm, through a vein, like a vessel, fistula. That one is very, very hard on your body, hemodialysis is, like the actual in-center. So then I tried peritoneal through your stomach, which is nightly exchanges of like fluid while you sleep. So that one's a lot easier, but I had some issues with that one and was not able to do that. So ultimately, I went to home hemo, which I got to do that at home. So that one was a lot easier to do, and it's just really hard. You don't get to do what you want to do. Like, I wasn't able to travel. If I had to travel, then most of my vacation was spent in a hemodialysis center. So but yeah, I mean, being off dialysis, it's great. Like, I get to go on my first vacation out of the country this year. So I'm really excited about that. I was never able to do that before.
How old were you when this all started?
14. Yeah.
So you're a young teen, and then you're not able to do a lot of the young teen things.
Yeah, I didn't go to my whole freshman year of high school. And then I was homeschooled that year, half of my off and on during my journey, my junior year. Senior year, I got to go, and I actually got to graduate. So that was really nice.
We'll talk about the process that you went under after your diagnosis and prior to the doctors identifying your uncle as a perfect match. Who all gets tested? What type of situation is that?
Well, they go to the family first. So my parents, my mom, she's not the same blood type as me, so we knew she wasn't able to. So my dad went, and my uncle. My sisters wanted to, but they were underage, and so they wouldn't take them. fortunately for us, my uncle was a match right away. But we, after that, we had a lineup of family members that still wanted to donate.
And it didn't happen.
Mm-mm.
So then you're placed on the waiting list?
Yes.
And so what is that conversation like when they explain how that works?
They basically come in and they ask, it's actually just a lot of paperwork, but they ask you, do you want to be placed? And then you say, yeah. You have to go through a lot of testing. And every month you'd have to either have your center, or where I was at home, I got to actually draw my blood myself. And you would have to ship a lab in, so you had a lab on file to make sure that they could, if somebody were to come in that matched you, they had something there that they could test.
So at first, how long did you think this was going to take? Were you optimistic?
I was trying to be. I mean, you lose sight of being optimistic after a while, but then, like, you have family there to support you. Fortunately for me, I did. And, I mean, it really helps if you have a support system. There's lots of people I know that I've talked to that don't really have one. And I know I've helped a lot of people that either were in center with me, and they like will Facebook message me and ask me. And especially after I got my transplant, they were like, well, how did you just say so happy? And I was like, it's kind of a front sometimes. Like, you have to act happy to make yourself happy sometimes, but it's really a struggle.
Was it more of a struggle as the years passed by?
Yeah, definitely.
Was there ever a moment over the course of those 13 years where you thought this isn't going to happen?
Oh, almost every day. Especially on dialysis days.
Veronica, you're here to talk about giving the gift of life because it was your kidney that Jordan was able to take.
Yes.
So tell us about how you became part of this.
Well, it kind of all started back in New York. My best friend, her dad, received a kidney, and she's the one who kind of educated me about Donate Life. And, you know, she had all these Donate Life games, and I really wasn't educated about it. And oddly enough, I was driving to work one day in lovely New York traffic, and I happened to be listening to a podcast. And, you know, this woman shared, and I was like, I should get tested. Like, I seem like I'm pretty healthy, and, you know, if I don't need it, why not, you know, give it to somebody else? So I went through all the testing in New York. Fast forward, I get the job at Miami, Ohio, and my mom thought I was going to forget, but I didn't. So I went to UC, and I went through all the testing. You know, I met Tina, I met Becky, and, you know, they were just great. And I was going through, and they were like, oh, my God, you're O positive. You are going to match right away. You know, kind of, I was like, oh, cool. Like, this is exciting. I get to help someone. And then through the process, I did match right away, and I had, you know, a surgery date set, and I was in classes, and I went to class, and my professor shared that her son needed a kidney, and I was like, what are the odds? So I kind of turned, my coworker was in my class, and I turned, and I was like, you know, oh my God. So I kind of talked to my mom, and I ended up matching with him. But he was at Children's Hospital, and then it ended up with anatomy. I ended up not being able to donate to him. So they reached out to me and said, you know, would you be part of the paired program, you know, so that he can still, you give a kidney and he can still get one. Because with me matching with him, he then got bumped down to the bottom. So, you know, I said, absolutely, any way I can help, you know. And then that's when Becky called me and said, you know, we have the match right away. And 2 weeks out, they said, you know, your recipient wants to meet you. And I was like, right now? Like now? And sure enough, that's when, you know, I met Jordan. And I happened to have my backpack on. And, you know, it had the little Miami logo. And she was like, oh, my God, Miami. And I was like, yeah, like, I work there. And she was like, well, I went to school there. And then, you know, it was kind of like an awesome, just immediate connection. And she just shared her story. And I was just blown away. Like, I can't even imagine being on dialysis for 13 years and to just have that resilience to just fight every single day. And, you know, how fortunate I was to be able to play sports and, you know, just go about daily life. You just often take it for granted. So, you know, to sit here and be able, and I was healthy enough to, you know, share and help her so that, you know, she can go on and kind of live how I was living was really exciting to me.
I want to get back to your story in just a moment, but I want to bring Andy in for this. Veronica is what you call an altruistic donor.
Correct.
So tell us what that is.
So essentially, I look at them as being heroes and just angels in many ways, because they think so much about others that they're saying, I want to step up. I want to donate a kidney to someone in need. And the bigger part of that story is having a living donor who's willing to donate a kidney to someone else in need. As you talked about, that national waiting list being over 112,000 people waiting, that then allows someone else to receive their gift of life, because an altruistic donor stepped up and said, yes, I'm going to do this and get tested. And as we were talking about before, we've really just seen a lot of interest in people wanting to do this because they believe that they can help another person. So why wouldn't they want to do that? And I think it's just so courageous. And I want to say thank you. And you really are, a gift and an angel in so many ways.
Is it typical for the donor and the recipient to meet in these situations?
Not typical. However, we are seeing it more than we have in the past. I've been with Life Center 14 years now, and I will say the last couple of years, we've seen more donor recipients meeting than we ever have. I think with the advent of Facebook, people are able to kind of figure, you know, who their potential, you know, who their donor was or their recipient. And so that's happening that way. And then also with the living donor situation, I think that people are able to facilitate that a little bit more easily.
Is there any understanding on the psychology of that? Does it put a recipient at ease? Does it make a donor nervous?
Well, I think that Jordan and Veronica could speak to it from the living donation side. Life Center facilitates deceased donation. And I can say from that aspect, there's a lot of mixed feelings because a recipient is a lot of times feeling guilt that, you know, someone had to pass away in order for them to receive this gift. And so that's very difficult. And how do you say thank you, you know, for receiving that life-saving transplant? And then from the donor family side, you know, they're dealing with a host of issues and emotional issues and dealing with the loss of their loved one. So it just varies from family to family and individual to individual. But I know that once they are able to meet, I think it begins a process of healing for the donor family, especially knowing that their loved one was able to help other people. And then it also gives that recipient that opportunity to thank that family and honor their gift that they received from their loved one.
This is Cincinnati Edition on 91.7 WVXU. I'm Michael Monks. We continue now with our discussion on National Donate Life Month with Mercy Hospital patient care assistant Jordan Ryan, who received a kidney after spending 13 years on dialysis. Miami University Director for Women's Basketball Veronica Mullen, an altruistic kidney donor to Jordan Ryan, and Community Relations Director for Life Center Organ Donor Network, Andrea Johnson. If you have questions or comments or want to share a story about organ donation in your life, give us a call, 513-419-7100. You can also email talk@wvxu.org or find us on Facebook or Twitter. And just before the break, Veronica and Jordan, we had mentioned that Jordan wanted to meet Veronica before this all went down. Mm-hmm. Jordan, why was that?
I just think that the main reason was after spending 13 years on dialysis, you just want to say thank you to that person. Like, they're saving your life. They're giving your life back, pretty much. And I feel like, yeah, I could have wrote a letter and sent it through, like, one of my coordinators to give to her. But I think actually facing her and saying thank you would have just meant so much more than just through a note or maybe a phone call or even a Facebook message down the road. I mean, if it was in my shoes, I would have just liked the face-to-face more.
How long ago was this?
It was 2 weeks before our surgery. Our surgery was in August, on August 15th of 2018.
Okay, so not many months ago.
No, not long at all.
So, Veronica, you had mentioned that Jordan wanted to meet you before this went in. How did you feel about that?
I was really excited. I was a little nervous, like, oh, you know, because they had warned me, you know, the recipient can say no. But I was just really excited just to meet her. Obviously, didn't know if it was a him or a her. You know, just to be like, wow, this is so exciting that I can help someone. And obviously that's why I wanted to do it in the first place. So.
So we get to the point of surgery. I guess you guys hit it off and you said, yes, I'll go through and take the kidney. And it's surgery time. So Veronica, you weren't suffering from any health ailments at this time. So were you scared at all in going under the knife and giving up a healthy kidney?
Oddly enough, I wasn't. I think the surgeons at UC did such a great job of explaining everything. You know, Tino was just so thorough in explaining everything as well. So I really was not nervous. I felt like I was in really, really good hands. And to get her off dialysis after 13 years was more of a focal point, like, for me than what I was going to go through for, you know, a few months.
Yeah. So tell us about that. Tell us about the medical situation that you endured. You had an operation and then you had some recovery.
Yeah, it was a bit of a struggle for me. I was like, okay, I can do this. 6 months, you know, she's endured 13 years. But I did struggle, you know, I'm very active and it was really hard for me to slow down. Like, okay, there's no running, there's no playing basketball. And that's what the surgeon was like, no, you really cannot pick things up. You really are going to have to ask for help. So that was something that was new for me, you know, big weakness of mine was asking for help and just taking it easy. But again, when you keep perspective and you understand a short 6 months is nothing compared to what she's endured, you know, half of her life.
So 6 months is just about expired. So you're kind of up on your feet now. And are you back to full speed?
I am back to full speed, 100%. And, you know, I've already, you know, played some basketball, training for a half marathon right now. So, you know, everyone is capable to share their spare.
And Jordan, how have you been?
I've been great. Yeah, I just went to the doctor last week and everything's good. I don't have to go back for 2 months. So everything's perfect.
Andrea, Andy, we're here today to talk about organ donation because April is National Donate Life Month. And we've got quite a story here, of course. Tell us about the process through which someone goes about becoming a donor. I know you said that your organization deals with people who have died primarily, I guess. But what can you tell us about people that might want to follow in Veronica's footsteps?
I would encourage them to reach out to, we have three fantastic transplant centers here in Cincinnati, in Cincinnati Children's Hospital Medical Center, Christ Hospital Health Network, and UC Health. And you can reach out and talk to a coordinator and learn more about that process and go through the evaluation.
Tell us about the Life Center Organ Donor Network.
Sure. Life Center, we've been around since 1981. We are one of 58 organ procurement organizations across the country. And what that means is that we facilitate the recovery of all organ, eye, and tissue for transplantation. So we have about 70 people on staff, the majority of which are clinical folks that are in the hospitals, and all deaths are reported to Life Center. And from then, we determine if that patient could be suitable for organ and or eye and tissue donation. And that's how the process, it just unfolds from there.
We see in TV and movies, you know, there's a cooler and a rush from the scene. What is it? What
there actually is a cooler. That's about all that they get correct.
Okay. So tell us about the real process. What happens?
So for organ, it's actually a very unique opportunity to be an organ donor. It's only about 1% of the deaths that occur over a year's time because you have to have sustained a non-survivable brain injury, and most people don't pass away that way. So, and they have to be in the hospital on a ventilator. So it's a very unique opportunity. If there is a patient that presents in that way, we have family service coordinators that will go out to the hospital and talk with that patient's family. And we will determine, was that patient already a registered donor? And if they are, then we talk through that with the family and let them know this is what your loved one wanted and had decided for themselves. If they weren't registered, then we'd present to them, your loved one has this tremendous opportunity to help others. And so that's how it unfolds from the organ aspect. Tissue donation is a little different in that you don't have that specific criteria. You don't have to be in the hospital on a ventilator. You could have passed away in a variety of different ways. It's just there's more people are able to be tissue and eye donors.
What kind of time frame are we dealing with when somebody passes and you want to get their organs into somebody else?
Hours. It's hours. It's a very tight time frame in which things have to unfold because the organs can't be they're not transplantable, you know, if they're not transplanted in a matter of hours. So it's all very coordinated. And so our folks are on the phone once that recovery takes place, working with other hospitals around the region to try to place those organs quickly.
When you deal with a family of a victim who was not registered as a donor and you present to them the opportunity that they have, how difficult is it to persuade them? Are they usually on board with it?
You know, it depends. And that's where education is key. And we work really hard at Life Center to provide as much information and messaging around donation so that people are informed about what that is. So if something like that were to happen and we were to approach a family, it's not so like, what, you know? We want people to understand what this truly means. And so education is key up front. And you have some families who have no idea, or there's myths and misconceptions that they have held on to for years that they're saying, absolutely not. Then you have other people who may have a connection to donation. They may have had a relative who received a transplant. So they may have a better understanding of what that means. So really, it just you really have to meet people where they are in that respect and just provide as much education as possible. I always encourage people to visit our website at lifepassiton.org. There's a wealth of information and some great stories. And I think stories are really, as we're hearing today, that's really what is most impactful.
And we'll have a link to that on WVXU.org in the Cincinnati Editions section. Jordan and Veronica, I want to ask you, because we're talking about National Donate Life Month. So life. Jordan, does life mean something differently to you now?
Definitely. I mean, I have a new, I guess you could say, lease on it. Like, I'm able to do so much now. I'm able to actually travel. I'm able to actually spend time with my family that it was wasted on a machine every day. I get to actually get up in the morning, get my son ready for school, and it's a lot of fun. It's so much fun now.
And how's your family been? I'm sure they're
excited. Oh, they're great.
To have you at
yeah.
Full strength.
So it's been a lot of fun. My husband was actually in the paired exchange. So that was actually it was good to actually go through it together with somebody, I think. So, yeah, because Veronica, she donated technically for, his name was Chase, I believe.
For Jackson.
Oh, Jackson. Jackson, yeah. So, and then my husband donated for me.
Oh, wow.
Yeah, so it was good to go through it with somebody, for somebody.
And so you said you're getting ready to go overseas for a vacation?
Well, yeah, we're taking a cruise. I've never been on one. I was never able to really go on one. But yeah, we're going to go to the Bahamas, just me and my husband. So it'd be fun. Yeah.
And Veronica, what about you? Does life mean anything differently to you now that you've been through this process?
I just try to always live life to the fullest. I don't think it means anything different. You know, it just gives you more compassion for people, you know, who are suffering different diseases, you know, different ailments. It just kind of opens your eyes to certainly not take things for granted, just the simple things in life.
What is an organ donation chain? That was something you were part of, Veronica.
Yes. So actually, my trainer back at St. John's University in New York kind of educated me on the SWAP program, as they call it in New York. I think here they call it the paired exchange. So when I initially did not match with Jackson and I kind of entered that, it was just, you know, blew me away that there's so many other ways to help people that people aren't educated about. Often someone goes in and typically family members and they try to donate. And if they're denied, you know, they sometimes think it stops there. But, you know, once you educate yourself about the SWAP program, there's so many other people you can take off, you know, this waiting list just by you wanting and willing to help someone. And just the chain reaction, it actually started two chains. So, you know, it helped Jackson not only receive a kidney, but it helped start a chain on that side. And then the same thing over here with her husband being amazing and him donating, that kidney went to somebody else. And just that chain reaction, I think the number was like 8 people ended up getting kidneys, which, I mean, it's just mind-blowing that, you know, one person taking the time out, getting tested, and understanding that you still can fully function and do all the things you're normally able to do by also helping somebody else. I mean, it's not that scary. And, you know, anybody can do this. You know, I don't consider myself special. I just think everybody can help in this world in their own way.
You know, a lot of people may line up to donate blood when there's some type of disaster or emergency where a lot of people are in need. But you are talking about an organ. You're talking about surgery and months of recovery. For people who are hearing this message today or reading about National Donate Life Month, and they are at least open to the idea. You said share your spare earlier or something along those lines. What do you say to them to push them over?
Yeah. You know, I understand it was a big major surgery, but I think when you just focus on the outcome, you know, you could focus on like, I mean, I was just brought to tears knowing that Jordan can finally go on the first vacation, you know, that she's never gone on. So like, if you focus on just how you're willing and able to help someone and stop focusing on yourself, which we often do so many times, that's how I would sway people. And like, you're going to be fully functioning. And there's no restrictions. I don't have any restrictions. You know, I didn't have to stop playing basketball. I didn't have to stop running. You know, I didn't have to stop eating certain foods. Like, you can share your spare and you're going to be okay. So,
Jordan, the Bahamas are nice, but I'm going to tell you right now about cruises. You're not going to want to get off the ship. They're amazing. They feed you constantly, and it's a great time. So I hope you have a great time
on that.
Thank you. I want to thank Jordan and Veronica for joining us today and sharing your stories. Very kind of you to come in. And Andrea will be sticking around for our next segment as well. Up next, more reaction from local recipients of life-saving organ transplants. This is Cincinnati Edition on 91.7 WVXU. Thanks for listening to Cincinnati Edition On Demand. Did you know you can have the show delivered straight to your smartphone every day? Just go to your favorite podcast listening app, search Cincinnati Edition, and subscribe. You'll be able to keep up with all our great conversations with newsmakers, public officials, and other interesting people from the greater Cincinnati region and beyond on the go, anytime, anywhere. It's great for those days you can't tune in to catch us live. Weekdays at noon on 91.7 WVXU. This is Cincinnati Edition on 91.7 WVXU. I'm Michael Monks. April is National Donate Life Month, and today we discuss what you need to know about being an organ donor and listen to stories of those who received a life-saving transplant. In the studio with me now are two guests who received an organ donation from the same person on the same day. Sarah Green Moore. Welcome, Sarah.
Good afternoon.
And good afternoon to you. And Renee Page. Welcome, Renee.
Well, thank you. Hello.
We've also got Community Relations Director for Life Center Organ Donor Network, Andrea Johnson. Glad you could stick around, Andrea.
Absolutely.
And on the phone right now is a man named Bob McCorkle. He received a kidney recently after being on the waiting list since 2015. Bob, you're on the phone with us. How are you?
Overall, I'm doing good. I just had surgery on Saturday, and everything was very successful. And I'm in recovery, and I'm actually going to be released sometime this afternoon.
Wow. Congratulations. So this is very recent. You have what happened? What's you had a kidney transplant. What were you dealing with?
Well, I have polycystic kidney disease, and it's hereditary, and I've had several family members that have passed away from kidney disease or who have had to get a kidney transplant. And in 2015, my doctors told me I needed to either find a donor or I would have to go on dialysis. And at that time, I didn't have a donor, so I had to go on dialysis. And I did the peritoneal dialysis, which you do peritoneal from home. So every night, I would have to do 8 to 10 hours of dialysis every night for the past 4 years. And it was challenging because I was working full time and I would have to come home, and by 7-8 o'clock I had to start treatment and go until 5 o'clock in the morning. And you know, I decided to join the Life Center as an ambassador to get the word out there, and that was probably one of the best things I'd ever done, because I got a chance to meet Andy and I got a chance to really get the message out there and network with other people, and things start falling into place. And Sunday, actually on April the 7th, I got a call from OSU Hospital, because I'm on their wait list. On April 7th, that morning, I got a call, and it said they had a kidney available for me and asked me how long it would take me to get there. And I got to OSU. We did all the blood work and everything, and we were scheduled to have surgery at 9 o'clock that night. And then by 8:15, the doctors came in and said, that's not a, it wouldn't be a good match, and my body would reject that kidney. And that was on the 7th of April.
Oh, man. So they told you were so close.
Yeah, it was an emotional roller coaster that day. And, you know, they said, keep your head up. You're going to get a kidney. You're at the top of the list. And that was on the 7th of April. So then I went home and took off work that Monday to regroup, because it was pretty stressful that day. And then Friday, I was at work and at lunch and at Long John Silver's, as a matter of fact. And they call. I got another call from OSU. And they said, hey, we have a kidney for you. How long will it take you to get here? And I said, 2 hours. And my family got me up here by 2 o'clock. And we did the exact same test and everything. And then by 6 a.m. that morning, I went to surgery and got my new kidney. And I've just been up here at OSU just recovering. And so far, everything's been going well.
And so all signs are pointing to positive.
All signs are pointing to positive. Now, it's going to take a good 6 months for my body to get adjusted to it, because I have to take the immunosuppressed medicine and, you know, I have to get adjusted and everything. But overall, things are going well.
We just had a young guest on in the previous segment who waited 13 years, was on dialysis that long. And that's a really, really long time. But 4 years is a really long time, too. And that's what you endured.
It was very challenging. 4 years, especially, you know, I would have to be in my room, and my catheter is about 20 feet long. So I could move around in my room, but I was in my room for 10 hours a night. And, so, you know, during the spring and summer, it's very difficult because the sun's shining and everyone's outside walking and everything, and I'm just sitting in my room watching TV.
How did you keep positive, or did you have any trouble with that, about thinking someday this is going to happen?
Well, what kept me motivated and positive is my family. My son, my family, friends, they kept me motivated and positive, and actually going to work every day was actually therapy. That helped me get away and stop thinking about dialysis and kidney disease. I was at work and focusing on my job. So that's really what kept me going. And, you know, my faith, going to church and praying about it.
And now that it's happened and you've got a recovery ahead of you now, and after that's over and you're on the other side of that, what are you looking forward to most?
I am looking forward to just enjoying life again, you know, being able to go to the gym and work out after work, or go early in the morning, or not have to worry about rushing home every evening. And I'm just looking forward to really the quality of life improving, because now I have time. And then also, I want to help other people. You know, I want to help those other folks that are on dialysis and that are waiting for a kidney. There's a young man that I do the kidney walk with every year. And this guy's not even 30 years old, and he's been on dialysis longer than me. And we've done the kidney walk for 4 years, and I really want to help him get a kidney. So that's my next goal, is to help him. And then there's an older gentleman who's in his 50s. He heard my story, and he's been contacting me because he's about to go on dialysis, and he's real nervous about it. So I've been kind of talking to him, trying to comfort him. So my goal is to continue to be a part of the Life Center and continue to help other folks.
Bob McCorkle just received a kidney just days ago after 4 years on dialysis. I know Sarah and Renee want to say hello to you, too.
Hey, Bob.
Hey, lady.
Hello,
hey,
Bob.
How are you?
Hi, Bob.
We're so happy for you.
Hugs and kisses.
Thank you very much.
They're very, very...
I'm ready to get out the hospital.
I know you are.
They're very happy for you. And Bob, we're going to let you go on and get your recovery underway. Best wishes to you on that.
Well, thank you very much.
That was Bob McCorkle who joined us. And now we'll continue with Sarah Greenmore and Renee Page, two recipients of organs from the same person on the same day. And we've also got Andy Johnson here from the Life Center Organ Donor Network. So, Sarah, Renee, that's sort of a strange thing that you're all in the same room here and you've benefited from the same person.
Yes.
Who wants to share that story, how this happened?
She was there first, so let's let Renee start.
Well, okay, Renee.
Well, on December 10th, around, I say, 11 o'clock, I received a call, didn't answer the call because I said it was a scam call. And my sister had called me and said, I think you have a kidney. I think you got the call for a kidney. I was like, I got the call? They called me? And I checked my voice message. It was a call. And I called them back. I didn't know what to do. Didn't know to sit, if I should sit down, stand up, run. I was laughing. I was crying. Emotions just everywhere. I called my sister. She said she was on her way to pick me up. I didn't know if I should pack a bag. I was just ready to go. I was excited. I've been waiting for this for 3 years. And I finally got the call. And I was getting discouraged because I would hear people at the center talk to people that say they were on a list 10 years, 15 years, 25 years. I was like, I'm not going to get the call. Well, I got the call. My sister took me to the hospital, and we were sitting in a waiting room, and I was just excited. And then while we were sitting there, this young lady gets off the elevator, and I told my sister, I said, Brenda, I bet you we have the same donor. I bet you she got the call. Well, as soon as she got off, I introduced myself, and I asked her if she got a call and if it was for the kidney, and she said yes, and that's when we connected.
And so that was you, Sarah.
That was me. And we've been connected at the hip ever since. For me, I was placed on a list in September of 2017. I got the call in December 2017. That doesn't happen.
So just a couple of months.
And I'm like, because I was doing peritoneal dialysis prior. So I know what Bob was going through because I was going through it too. Because me and hemodialysis did not mix. We just did not mix at all.
You're showing your arm.
Oh,
here.
Yes. We just didn't mix. So I ended up doing peritoneal dialysis, which allowed me to go back to work. Because like Bob, in the evening, I would hook up. And then in the morning, I would drain. And I would keep it moving. Doing hemodialysis, I was drained all the time. No energy. None. But then there are some people it doesn't affect like that. But with me, it did. And I was surprised that it did affect me like that because of how active I was. It doesn't matter. If it hits you, it hits you. But I've been going strong and doing whatever it is I want to do when I want to do it. It actually took 2 years for the doctors to catch me once I was diagnosed with chronic kidney disease. Took 2 years because I'm like, not me, because I had none of the symptoms. I did not display any of them. So I'm like, nope, not me. And then my mother, she passed. And then I had to stop thinking about myself and my family, especially my brothers and sisters, and come to the realization like, hey, yes, you do. And that's when I started the process with hemodialysis. I had 10 to 12 surgeries in about 15-16 week period before I went to peritoneal dialysis. Because at that point, I had said time out. I'm not going under no more tap now. So that's when I started peritoneal dialysis. And then from there, prior to starting dialysis, me telling my brothers and sisters, I actually had a picnic at my big brother's house. I told him first. I had a picnic and had everybody and got them all fat and full. After they got fat and full, then I told them about me having chronic kidney disease and that I would be going on dialysis. And every time I tell the story and think about the story, I see my younger brother, Jonathan, and the look on his face like, I'm not about to go through this again. And so I had to reassure him that the only thing that's wrong with your sister is she needs a kidney. Other than that, your sister is your sister. And I allowed him to go with me to, you know, go through the journey with me at the beginning. And then once he got comfortable and felt that I was okay, I don't see him that much anymore.
But now you have another sister.
And
you call yourselves the kidney sisters.
Well, when I woke up, the doctor said to me, you know, your kidney sister is looking for you. And I'm like, well, where's she at? Then the next thing I know, she is coming down the hall, her and her IV, pumps and all. She's coming down the hall. And we've been connected ever since. So yeah. For Christmas that year, not only did I receive a kidney, but I received a sister too. So I got two for one.
Renee, what do you know about the person from whom you received these kidneys?
Well, we don't know. Okay. We don't know. We both wrote letters and shared our story with them. But we
haven't. Who did you write letters to?
Well, we wrote letters to the center and Life Center, and they shared it, I believe, with the families. And from there.
How does this work, Andy?
So there's a process. If the donor family or the recipient wants to reach out and communicate to the other person, then that communication is written, then it's sent to Life Center. And from there, then Life Center will reach out to the other party and let them know, we have this communication. Would you like to receive it? And they can say yes or no. And if they say yes, we send it on. Doesn't always mean that people will get a timely response or get a response at all. It really, again, as I talked about earlier, just really kind of depends on where people are in their journey. And if they're a donor family, you know, maybe they're just not ready, you know, or what do they say? So there's a lot of dynamics that go into that.
Because I imagine that in some cases, there's someone who may have died in a hospital, and other times there was some more sudden tragedy.
Yeah, and typically with people who are organ donors, it typically is something very sudden. So it could be a car accident, it could be a brain aneurysm, something along those lines. And so there's that piece that, you know, families may be dealing with or struggling with.
What's the easiest way for a person to let the public know or emergency responders know that they're going to donate their organs should something happen to them?
The easiest way is to designate yourself as a donor when you go to the BMV and you're asked that question. You can say yes, and then when you say yes, then your name is placed in the Ohio Donor Registry or Kentucky or Indiana, depending which state you're in. And from there, then it's essentially, I mean, that's it. That's all you have to do.
What organs and parts of the body is your organization on the hunt for people who are on waiting lists?
Well, kidney by far is the organ that is in most need. As we said, there's over 112,000 people waiting for life-saving transplants. Locally, there's more than 600 people. The majority of those are waiting for kidneys, and the majority of them are people of color. And so there is a higher rate of kidney disease and illnesses that can ultimately lead a person to having to get transplant.
You provided some information that suggests that it has been difficult to find donors in minority communities. Why is that, do you think?
I think it is, there's just that the myths and misconceptions that I spoke about earlier. And what I have found in my time with Life Center is that I think these myths, they cycle through families for generations. And so you may have heard from your great-grandmother that they're not going to do everything they can to work on you, so why would you do that? I think sometimes, particularly with the African-American community, there's some distrust around the medical system because of things that have happened historically with experiments and things of that nature. And so we have a lot to do from an education standpoint because I'm a big believer you got to give people the facts so that they can make an informed decision. And that's why stories from Bob, from Sarah, from Renee are so important. And then also stories from donor families, just critically important to really dispel those myths.
Renee and Sarah, you are African-American women. You have received kidneys. Do you find that to be true, that it's difficult to talk about these issues within the Black community?
Yes. I've even experienced it in my own family. And so for them to be able to see not only me, but Renee at the same time, how we're doing, what we're doing, it just blows their minds. It just literally blows their mind. And a lot of them have gone to the BMV and have been designated as donors. And I'm so proud of that, you know, of my families and friends of doing that, because the misconceptions, like Andy was saying, was out there. Because at first, my family thought that Renee had donated a kidney to me. No. Oh, someone donated a kidney to both of us at the same time. That's our connection.
And Renee, I want to ask both of you in our final minute that we have here, so you have to share some of our little time that we have remaining, but do you look at this as a second chance at life?
Oh, yes. Okay. Yes, this was the best gift that I have ever received. And I just thank God for it. I thank God for that family that allowed their loved one to donate. And without them, I don't think we would be here, because we were going downhill. And that call was at the right time.
And Sarah?
I feel the same way. Not only was the call at the right time, but that call also resulted in a relationship that'll last until the end of time and beyond.
We'll have information at WVXU.org under the Cincinnati Edition program about how you can register to become a donor, and some information about the organizations and people that we talked about today. I want to thank Sarah Greenmore and Renee Page for joining us today. Thank you both. And also Andy Johnson from the Life Center Organ Donor Network. Thanks for being here all day.
Thank you so much.
You've been listening to Cincinnati Edition on 91.7 WVXU. The producer for today's show is Pete Reitmeier. The assistant producer is Selena Reeder. The technical director is Josh Elstro. You can find archives of our program online at WVXU.org. I'm Michael Monks.